Hi, I'm Paul Lisnick, and welcome to Behind the Curtain. Hey, everybody, this is Paul Lisnick. Welcome to Behind the Curtain. I'm, of course, with WGN-TV, but on the podcast here, we get to talk some entertainment news. And joining me today, if that music sounded familiar, of course, you know that from the great classic film, Brat Pack film, The Breakfast Club. And my guest has been a star not only from that, but Vacation and Weird Science. But you know what? Though that was then, and we can never forget about him because his career has progressed in so many different and incredible ways. We're going to explore it now, including a new project coming on right here in Chicago. Joining me, Anthony Michael Hall, one of the great actors and actually versatile director. Go on and on. He's done it all. Anthony, thanks for joining me.
Paul, thank you very much. Very kind of you. Good to be with you.
So I want to start with the current project because everybody always reminisces with you. We'll get to do that too, but you're in Chicago for a reason, for a movie called The Class. And what I love about this, Anthony, is the fact that you were always known in those young days as that sort of nerdy, geeky kid that maybe the teachers and the principals weren't wild about, but now you are that guy, right? You are that principal.
Right. Well, Paul Gleason was a great friend. God rest his soul. He's no longer with us, but yeah, you know what? It is funny. They've gone full circle, Paul, as you mentioned. So the film is called The Class. It was written by a very talented writer-director from here in Chicago named Mickey Salozzi. And we have a great cast. And what it is, it's an original screenplay. It's an updated version of it, if you will. It kind of follows the same framework, but it's an original idea, an original project. So we just wrapped shooting a couple days back, and it was really great. Everybody really delivered, did a great job, including our young cast. They were really fantastic. Yeah.
And I'm just sort of curious, I mean, because people of my generation, which is a little bit older than you, not too much, but you know, I look at those classic movies you made with, you know, all of your friends back then, the Brat Pack kids, hope you don't mind that reference, but that's what they get referred to. And you've come so far from that. Do the young people you work with now, do they know those days? Were they fans of those movies, or were they being introduced to you in many ways for the first time?
Well, you know what? It's really a testament more to John Hughes than myself, Paul. I was really so fortunate to be part of these great projects that John did. You know, so I did Vacation as a kid. I did the three films right after that John directed, 16 Candles, Breakfast Club, and Weird Science. And you know what's amazing is that I think his work just keeps finding younger generations because he was really brilliant about it, right? It was always great stories. He always used humor in a great way. And I think that's the thing that's really surprising and very compelling about it is that people keep finding those movies, particularly The Breakfast Club, which I think people really love. So it's really a gift. It's a great feeling. Yeah.
And when, by the way, and you're also producing this movie, right? Aren't you also a producer?
That's right. I'm one of the producers. There's about five of us on the project. Yeah. So it's been really fantastic how it came together. We shot at Elmhurst University, and they were really accommodating and great to us. So really a fun project. So we'll see where it's going to happen. We have some distributors already interested in the project. So it's really fun. Looking forward to seeing it.
And now that I know shooting is completed, you're still with us here in Chicago at the time, but when do we expect that this will premiere in theaters?
I think if not in the theaters, maybe on one of the big streaming services next year. So I think it's something we don't want to hold too long, but there's a great buzz about the film and just a great young cast. We had Charlie Gillespie and Lyric Ross and Hannah Keppel and Colin McKellar, Michael Sebastian, and Juliet Solosi. And in this version, there's six kids instead of fives. But you know what's incredible, Paul, is the stakes. The writing is really strong. It's really sort of modern-day, real-life stuff that these kids are going through. In many ways, it kind of transcends even what we did with The Breakfast Club, which will seem kind of innocent compared to what we have here. So it's a really exciting project. We also have a lot of great humor in the film. So it's going to be cool. It's going to be really cool to see where it winds up. But I think sometime next year we'll get it released.
And Anthony, I know you're known for, you know, you've done a lot of comedy. I want to talk to you about the Goldbergs, but here's the thing. And I mean this absolutely as a compliment, but if somebody were to say to me, what does Anthony Michael Hall do? How would you describe him? I don't know how to describe it because I think it's unfair to you to pin you to those days of the past when your record includes Johnny B. Goode and Out of Bounds and Edward Scissorhands and playing Bill Gates and the Pirates of Silicon Valley. I mean, dude, you are a serious dramatic actor. How do you describe Anthony Michael Hall?
Oh, I appreciate that, buddy. You know what? I worked with a guy named Danny Trejo that we all know a couple years back, and Danny had a great line. I was kind of always, you know, just shooting the stuff with him on the set and talking about life. And he had a great quote that came from his heart. He goes, "Mike, I'm like a mechanic. I go where the work is." So I love the fact that, you know, I've had a great body of work that I've been able to contribute to, great projects over the years. And really, that was always my plan, Paul, just to kind of mix it up and plan for longevity, try to just keep going, you know. So in that, I've been able to play a lot of different types of parts. I think a great intelligent thing to do as an actor is to be a part of an ensemble. So I play small parts. I kind of like to mix it up. And I like going from different genres and different mediums. You know, it's great to go from TV to a film and whatever else. Now we have all these huge streaming companies. So I'm just grateful for the work. And I've really tried to just focus on diversifying it, you know, going from light characters to dark characters, you know, from comedy to drama. And I just like mixing it up. So that's been my really kind of my sole strategy over the years, you know.
And, but it also means, you know, when a producer, which you are, or a director is trying to cast or create a film, create a production, you know, they have to, as you know, they have certain people in mind, right? This is a Tom Cruise vehicle. This is a, you know, a whoever vehicle. In your case, it's probably an Anthony Michael Hall and a Debbie Gibson vehicle who's with you. So if I was producing a movie and it was going to be new, what kind of movie do you think I would be producing today where I'd say this is an Anthony Michael Hall vehicle?
Well, you know, it's interesting because over the years, like in recent years, I've done different roles. I did this film with Brad Pitt a couple of years ago for Netflix, which is called War Machine. I was playing a general in that. You know, I've done other TV shows, you know, from Riverdale to the show Awkward, which was a great success on TV. You know, I like mixing it up. I did the Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. show. So I like playing villains. I think people would kind of know me from that stuff. I have played a bunch of teachers in recent years, which is a lot of fun, too. Takes the whole John Hughes thing full circle. So I just kind of like mixing it up. And I think that's to have that kind of man of a thousand faces approach is important. I think I've always wanted that kind of chameleon like ability to, you know, just to kind of try different things and go with it, you know, and see what happens.
Yeah. And of course, there was that year, and I actually remember it, 1985 or so, you and your buddy, Robert Downey Jr., were on SNL, I guess tapping into your those comedic days of yours. Actually went back before we talked and watched some of the clips from back then. But what's your memories of SNL? Was that something you were happy you did? Was it good for the career?
Oh, yeah. Sure. Well, I was a huge fan, like all of us. As a little kid in the 70s, I remember staying up late and watching the original shows. You know, that was so much about that time, that great, incredible initial cast. So, and then I also followed all through the Eddie Murphy and, you know, Billy Crystal, Joe Piscopo years. So I was always a fan of that stuff. And even though I never did stand-up comedy, Paul, I always loved comics. I always loved that show. So it was just a thrill, man, when I got the call from Lorne Michaels to be a part of the show. You know, unfortunately, looking back, it was really not one of the better seasons of all, you know, 45 or 46 that there'd been. It was, we were on shaky legs, to say the least. But just to be a part of that show, Paul, is amazing. You know, it's just an incredible combination of theater, rock and roll, you know, and making a TV show all wrapped in one. So it was an incredible experience, even though you didn't have necessarily great sketches or great bits or characters each week, just being a part of it, being part of that team was an incredible rush, you know, and a great learning experience too. Absolutely.
And some people may not know, I know, but one of your best friends in life now is Robert Downey Jr. But here's the thing. It means you've gone through life with him. He's had some ups and downs. They're very public, right? And so have you been that friend that was with him, getting him through the tough times, and how are things today?
Well, certainly. You know, I mean, obviously his wife is incredible, Susan. I mean, they've been together for years now, and I'm godfather to his oldest son, Indio. But Robert's story is an amazing thing. You know, he's certainly one of the most talented actors of our generation or the last generation. And I also feel he's a great, great role model. I mean, I think that's the greatest comeback we've ever seen in the history of Hollywood. You know, so the fact that he's gotten his life so on track and he's now really flourishing as a producer with their company that they have, Team Downey. As you know, they're producing Perry Mason and they're doing Sweet Tooth for Netflix. So we have a project in development and we've been great friends for years. But, you know, I have been there for him years ago when he was in prison for he had that stint. You know, I went to visit him and I was always tried to be a true friend, you know, and he in turn has been the same for me. He and his wife, they're great friends, you know, so love him and I'm proud of him. Just incredible journey he's had. Yeah.
And as you know, Anthony, while I know a lot about you and done a lot of homework, I wanted to find everything I could. And so, of course, the key accurate source for everybody is Wikipedia. There's no mistakes in Wikipedia. And I'm glad you're laughing because I'm laughing too. But you know what? They had one thing in here that I don't think
that
is
Google,
true.
Right? Yeah.
Right. Yes. That, no, Google, I think you might be okay with Google. Yeah. But there is something in here and I don't think it's true. So this is your chance to either confirm Wikipedia or we're going to write them and tell them they got to change it. Because because I know you love John Hughes.
Far away.
You talk about him. Okay. I know you love John Hughes. And this says, I'm actually looking at it. It says, to avoid being typecast, Hall, that's you, turned down roles written for him by John Hughes in Ferris Bueller's Day Off, the Cameron Frye role, and Pretty in Pink, the Ducky role, because you were concerned about being typecast. And that just doesn't sound like it doesn't sound like your relationship with John Hughes. You love the guy.
No, you're right. It's not the case. So basically what happened was because of the work and the career that he'd given me as a kid, I was on other projects and we just couldn't work out the dates. I mean, Ferris Bueller, he actually wrote for me. He wanted me to play Ferris and he also wanted me to be a part of Pretty in Pink right before that. But I was just busy with some other projects as a kid. So it was kind of his fault. He just wanted to overload me with work. But you know how it is. You want to wish everybody success. And that went on to great success. Ferris Bueller became one of his biggest hits. And I think Broderick was fantastic in it. So you know how it is. You just want to wish people well. And there's room for success for everybody. You know, it's always root people on.
If John Hughes were still alive, this is a tough question maybe, but what kind of films would he be producing today? Because I think even he would look back at all the films we've been mentioning, and that was an era for him. What would John Hughes be doing today, and would you be working with him?
It's a great question. I would hope to be. You know, certainly I would love to. I would have continued that collaboration all my life, you know. I think the thing that one of the keys to his success, I think, is these kind of character arcs that he had, right? So these characters always wind up a little better off than they started. And obviously the great use of humor. You know, whether he would have continued to make films for a youth market or, you know, a certain age group, I think he would have. But I think he also, if you look at films like She's Having a Baby and, you know, the one he did with Dan Aykroyd and John Candy, the title is escaping me at the minute, but they just, he had great, great range. You know, he could go more dark in some cases, like The Breakfast Club, but always there was this humor and this sort of triumphant ending to all the films, you know? So I think he would have done incredible work for many more years to come, you know, of course.
And will we see his inspiration through Nick Solosi's writing? And by the way, since so many of our listeners are in Chicago, yes, Nick Solosi is the son of Solosi Edelson, which I hope you got a free car out of this deal, man. If you negotiated your deal,
I got to meet Mr. Solosi, and I saw some of those ads. He's incredible. What a great guy. He's going real strong, too. I think he's 90 now. What a great guy.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great question. I think John would absolutely love it. You know, it was nothing I ever anticipated doing, Paul, but having done it, it was incredible. He took the kind of basic framework and structure and wrote his own thing. You know, he's very much inspired by David Mamet, very talented writer, director, and a great guy. He has two kids that are 20 and 18. One of them is Juliet Solosi, who was in the film. She did a fantastic job. And I think that, you know, he really did have a lot of that. He had a lot of John's, you know, innate writing ability, almost as like a playwright. And I saw that in him. Mm. And then the only note that I had for him is I said, let's make sure we mix it up so the kids have cathartic moments where there's some humor or they laugh or laugh at themselves. Because that was another thing that I learned in working with John, too. Like, if you look at The Breakfast Club, it's like when the kids dance or when they get high, there's that kind of release that the audience then enjoys as well. So I think that was important. And Nicky really just did a great job directing this scene.
You know, when you talk about the David Mamet influence, it's all about the language. It's about the patter, right? The rhythm of speech. Are we
Absolutely.
Going to see that in the class?
Yeah. Absolutely. No, you're nailing it. That's right on there, Paul, because that's exactly what Nicky has. I mean, all the dialogue, everybody has like a sentence at a time or even a broken sentence. You know, there's a certain rhythm that he writes with. And he really, like John, has an ear for it. You know, it's the kind of just a, you know, adult and smart treatment of younger adults as opposed to sort of compartmentalizing and going, oh, I'm writing for kids or this is a teen movie or whatever. So really compelling stuff. Great characters. There's a real nice equal distribution, too, and all the conflict for each of them. And as I said earlier, the stakes are much higher in this project. It's incredible. Well, I don't want to give anything away, but the issues that these six kids are dealing with in the script are revealed in a very similar way as we did in Breakfast Club, but they're much heavier. They're much more, I think, even more compelling, you know, socially and emotionally for them.
Wow. Yeah. By the way, I think Mamet wrote really the screenplay stuff, the Phil Speck. Well, yes, for all about Last Night, which people know. And it was originally based on his play called Sexual Perversity in Chicago, which he signed my copy saying, thank you for helping me write this. Not sure what that meant. And it sounds like I have some money coming to me, right?
You inspired him. Good.
Yeah. And I also have to tell you, I know this is about you, not me, but I have to tell you, he also, I think, wrote the screenplay for a movie called The Phil Spector Story. And part of my past life was as a jury consultant. We worked in this Phil Spector story. So I always wondered, Helen Mirren played the lead lawyer, who's a friend of mine. And I always wondered who would play me, because I was the jury consultant. And I thought it might be maybe you, maybe Joseph Gordon-Levitt. That would have been beautiful, right? And he cast his wife. It was his wife in a polka dot dress playing me. Anthony, it's not right.
Isn't that interesting? That's funny. That's funny. Wasn't that a great film? I mean, Pacino was at his finest, and Helen Mirren, too. That was what a great movie that was. I loved it.
Oh,
hey, you know, even though it was a dark, true story, obviously, but very good film.
And now you know there was somebody playing me in that movie. hey, let me also ask you, this is sort of great, because there was a little homage... Right. The little homage played to you. If I say the name, the Anthony Michael Hall Literacy Club, what does that mean for you?
Well, you know what? This is something I started. There were some educators at the school that came to me. This was about 20 years ago now. And they asked me to, you know, to get involved in this literacy program, which for at-risk high school students in Orange County at Chapman University. And then they were kind enough to kind of name it, you know, in my honor. And it was a real honor. And I worked with that program, and it ran for about 5 years. It's not around anymore, but it was really fantastic, because after 5 years, I actually saw the kids that came back to the school that went on to great educations and great jobs. So it was a really cool project that I was a part of. And as I said, I was at Chapman University in Orange County, California. But that was fun, a lot of fun.
And not to be confused with the Anthony Michael Dining Hall of Not Another Teen Movie, right?
Right. That was another nice nod. There was less work involved in that, but it was really nice to see that. I know Joe Galman and I made the film, so that was kind of a funny little wink, I guess. Yeah.
Yes. And so while we're waiting for the class to come out, I want to pay a little tribute here, because we don't have to wait for the class to see Anthony Michael Hall on screen again, because I'm assuming around Halloween time, we're going to get to see you.
Yeah. That's right. No, I'm starring in Halloween Kills with Jamie Lee Curtis. And I got to tell you, Paul, I don't think I've ever been more pumped up about a movie. I shot this in 2019. We did it in Wilmington, North Carolina. And I got to work with Danny McBride, who I'm a huge fan of, and David Gordon Green as well. These guys are awesome. So their company, Rough House, produced it. David directed it. And I was just thrilled. You know, I met with David in L.A. a couple of years ago, and then I screen tested and kind of won the role. And I'm just pumped about it. You know, my character is Tommy Doyle, who comes back from the original now as a man of 50. Here I am at 53. And it's just an incredible, it's an incredible thrill ride. Like, everybody's raving about it. Jason Blum from Blumhouse, as well as John Carpenter. And the early screenings have been really exciting. So the film is going to debut next month at Venice. They're giving Jamie Lee a Lifetime Achievement Award at the Venice Film Festival, which is really exciting. So I'm pumped for that. I'm really excited to see the film and for audiences to see it, because, as you know, that's like the Star Wars of horror films. You know, people love the Halloween franchise, so I'm honored to be a part of it. Yeah.
Am I going to be? Would you come and watch it with me in my living room in case I get a little too scared?
You might need some friends around, huh? You don't like horror films too much, Paul, huh? This is a
slasher.
I go to a horror movie. Yeah,
I know people don't want to sit with me because I can't help myself. I punch the person next to me. If I get scared, I punch the person. They're like, "What are you doing?" And I'm like, "I didn't mean it."
Well, you know what? I think that's it. I think that's the visceral thrill of it. That's why people love those, right? It's like roller coasters. They don't know why they love them. They just want the ride. They love it.
Exactly. And, you know, we also have to spend some time talking about the Goldbergs. Of course, you know, as it wraps, and George Siegel just passed away, and I don't know how friendly you got with him. But talk a little bit about your work on the Goldbergs, the great Jeff Garland, who is just amazing.
I'd be happy to. Well, he's fantastic. No, thank you for the question. Yeah, you know what? I got to meet George years ago, and I was so sad when I heard about his loss. I didn't really get to work with Mr. Siegel on the show, because my scenes were mostly with Adam and Wendy and the other family members. But just incredible. It was a big loss. You know, he was a great guy. I remember meeting him as a kid years ago on a plane, and the fact that he even knew who I was just blew me away. But what a great actor, you know, and so many great films over the years, and TV, drama, and comedy. It's another guy that could really show range, you know, so it's a big loss. But such a fun show to work on, great group of people, you know, everybody's in a great mood, and it's always fun doing a hit comedy, you know, if you could be a part of something like that. So I'm really thrilled to be working with ABC on it, you know.
Yeah. And I want to talk a little bit about your production company, Manhattan Films. What are some of the projects going on there? And I'm assuming the projects we're talking about, they're not tied to Manhattan Films, right? That's separate from this.
Exactly. Well, this came separately through, you know, it's more of Monaco Films, which is Mickey and Mike Sportelli's company, two producing partners. But I am an executive producer on it, so it kind of does fall underneath my banner. Yeah, Manhattan Films is my company. I've had it for about 5 years, just putting projects and stuff together. One of the things I'm doing is I've created a kind of a road tour, almost like what I read that Mark Twain used to do years ago. I created a show where sometimes I screen my films and I go up and I do like a live Q&A and kind of interact with the audience and tell stories from the road. And it's been a lot of fun. So I'm putting together another tour for this year. Excuse me. And our first date is going to be in Rhode Island, Woonsocket, Rhode Island, on September 9th at a great old theater called the Stadium Theater. So if people are in Rhode Island or the New England area and they hear this, come on out and see the show. It'd be great. So that's one of the things I'm doing, this kind of live, kind of one-man show from the road that I've developed. And then sometimes, like I said, we do it with films, and we screen the old films. And I did one last year in Austin, Texas, that became kind of a drive-in film festival of my films and other friends of mine. So, that's one thing. And then developing film and TV projects. I have a bunch of things, in the works right now. So it's been really fun to kind of progress to that level, too,
Because so much of your work was in theater, I mean, SNL was before a live studio audience and all that, but I do find, in movies, I should say, I do find that people who come out of the theater, the Broadway world, there is this sort of difference between people who come alive and they need an audience to come alive in front of, and then there's those who just, work their magic on the screen. Then you have the Al Pacinos of the world who I remember seeing on Broadway in Cuban as Teddy Bear, but also, of course, all his films. What about you? How much do you like working in front of a live audience, or is the magic created for you behind, in the film, on the screen?
It's a great question. For years I really did prefer film and television acting. And quite honestly, I question it sometimes if it made me lazier. Having done this one-man show for the last couple of years and developing it and taking it on the road with this kind of interactive piece, because I've never been a stand-up, but just kind of playing with audiences and recollecting on stories and things that I've experienced. It's been a lot of fun. So it's given me a really healthy new respect for, obviously, live theater. Now, I'm someone who's loved it. I grew up in Manhattan, so I would go to shows growing up over the years. And I love taking my wife. We go to musicals. We see shows whenever we're in New York. So I love that. And I think that, I did this thing called The Exonerated, and this was something that Bob Balaban produced. This was about 10 or 15 years ago in New York. And it was incredible. It was kind of like the Vagina Monologues. It was a bunch of actors. We had our text and we read from the scripts on stage, but at the same time, it was like doing a play. So I really got into it, Paul, to answer your question. I love doing my show, which is more sort of comedy based, but I've also done and experimented with other projects like The Exonerated. And it's incredible. You really understand why people live for the theater experience, because it's that interactivity with the audience that is giving you that energy that you're then feeding off of at the same time. So I love both. I'm really learning to appreciate that more and more.
As I look at these later career, if you will, you're only 50, but as I look at your later films, and if I were to ask you who your influence was in film, I would expect you to say a name like a Pacino, a De Niro, one of those kinds of names. Except when I think back to your early films, I think, no, you'd go in a different direction. So I'll ask the question. Who are your influences in this business?
Right. Well, that's a great one. As a kid, there were so many. I loved old movie stars like Tracy and Stewart. And, there's so many great actresses, too, I've admired over the years. But, and then when I was coming up in the industry, of course, I always loved Pacino and De Niro. I'm Italian, Irish, American. So, I love my Pacino and De Niro films. And Scorsese is my favorite filmmaker. So I think so many, And as I got older, I started really to tap into a lot of the leading guys in the 70s. I loved McQueen is a big favorite of mine. I love Paul Newman. There's so many great actors and actresses. It just reminds me of SNL again. There's another example. There were so many great male comics and female comics. Quite honestly, over the years, I think there were even more great female comedians that came off that show. So I love it. I love staying open to new talent. You look at someone like Kate McKinnon or, the new generation of comedians on the show. They're incredible. And then they go on to these incredible careers where they're doing a lot of really interesting, diverse work, too. So I love that kind of flexibility, and I love when I see it in others, too. It's fun.
I see, to me, because I see you as the dramatic and the comedic, and I think of people like Dustin Hoffman or even Jackie Gleason, and I wonder whether they could be influences.
Oh, he's great.
Definitely, amazing.
Paul. No, I love the Honeymooners growing up. I love the Honeymooners. I loved all those black and white comedies, like everybody. I grew up watching Lucy and the Honeymooners, and then growing up, obviously, in the 70s, as a little kid, I was all into those ABC, kind of James Burroughs, Taxi, and all those great shows. So there's so many great people And, you know, the fun of our business is when you run into them, I get to work with some of these people. So I've really treasured it over the years. Even when I worked with actors that were in their later years when I was a young man, with someone like Angela Lansbury, Dick Van Dyke, I've really been privileged to work with some great actors. So what I do is I kind of always kind of interview them on the sly. You know, I ask them questions and get a sense of their careers and their experiences, and it's incredible. That's a great, really great gift about working in the industry.
And so as you look forward, by the way, I've got War Machines all lined up on my Netflix. I haven't seen that in so long because I think that also got delayed for a while, didn't it?
Yeah. It did. You know, so I'm ready to watch. What I found out is they were actually kind of waiting for they're waiting on the election back in 2016. So they delayed it an extra year. They didn't want to compete with the election at that time without getting into politics. But basically, it was delayed by a year. And I mean, that was an incredible experience. I've always admired Brad. He's a great actor. He's a great movie star, great producer. You know, his company has done such incredible work, Plan B. So I jumped at this opportunity. I had actually another big job on the table, and I just left it to do that film, War Machine. It was a great experience.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing it. And is there anybody, I mean, as you look at the foray of it, you could probably go to somebody and say, hey, I want to work with this person in a film. Who is out there you haven't worked with yet that you really hope to work with?
Well, when I think on that level, like, I'm always happy to meet and work with all types of actors, but I really kind of like focusing on the filmmakers, too. So there's guys that I admire. I love Wes Anderson, for example. I love Paul Thomas Anderson. Oh, yeah. I love some of those, you know, great filmmakers that have really created an identity with their work in the last 10 or 15 years. So that's a lot of great filmmakers. But you know what, too? What my experience has taught me, Paul, is, like, when I did The Dead Zone, for example, or I worked on other TV shows, sometimes the best directors are on TV, too. They could be so prepared and so well-versed. And they know how to rally a crew and get all their shots. And, you know, so again, you just stay open to the process. And I've found, you know, that I've benefited and learned so much from all types of different mediums and different people, you know.
And maybe we need you in a Tarantino film.
Hey, I'm on board. I'd love it. My wife actually worked on Once Upon a Time in America. She had a role in that. She played J.C. Sebring's girlfriend. They unfortunately had to cut the scenes out because, you know, Tarantino, I think the film ran for 3.5 hours originally. But she got to work with him, and she just loved it. She just said he was incredible. He's got this great refrain when they're on the set. First of all, he makes everybody check their cell phones at the door, Paul. Nobody comes to the set with a cell phone. But when they're rallying and they're trying to get a shot, apparently before almost every setup, Tarantino turns to the crew and goes, guys, why are we doing this? And everybody is trained to go, because we love making movies. And they all sing it out like a chorus. So she loved working with Tarantino. Yeah, she said he was just fantastic, like a big kid.
I'm going to get the director's cut and look for your wife in that. Anthony Michael Hall, what a treasure and honor to talk with you. I will. I'll call.
Thank you, Paul.
Can't wait for the class to open because that's just going to – I'm just going to love that. And as well as Halloween Kills, I'll be waiting for that. As I said, you're invited to sit next to me and have me punch you while I get scared. But it's a great pleasure having you. You know, we love you in Chicago, man. You need to just buy a home here and stay here. Can you do that?
You're not kidding, man. I love it. It's a pleasure spending some time with you again, Paul, and I had a great time in the interview, so thank you.
All right. Anthony Michael Hall, one of the greatest actors around. Thank you, my friend. We'll talk to you soon. Take care.
All right, sir. Thank you.
Well, if you want to know more about what we've talked about here, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Paul Lisnek. That's PAULLISNEK. And I'd love to hear your comments or topic suggestions for future podcasts. You can also go to my website, paullisnek.tv. And hey, don't forget to hit subscribe on WGN Plus and iTunes and tune in each week to hear more insider scoop coming to you from behind the curtain.